everyone just knows you don't have to talk about love or compassion, because that's what these practices are fundamentally about.
Then loving kindness comes up, and the word joy comes up. And I thought that that was particularly interesting, because when you're talking about joy, you describe it as being okay no matter what the conditions are.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's sometimes in Buddhist philosophy that practice is sometimes called sympathetic joy, right? It's feeling happy because of the joy of others, right? So things like compassion and loving kindness and joy and equanimity, these are kind of core teachings around four qualities of love. One of my favorite books, this has been a really good year, I feel like, for books. One that really grabbed me was Michael Pollan's, it's funny, the title of his book, How to Change Your Mind. Mm-hmm. How to Change Your Mind, a book basically about hallucinogenics. But the experiences over and over again that people taking just this tiny little bit of mushroom is everything else drops. When everything else drops away, what's left is love. And it turns out that it's the same part of the brain impacted by meditation and mindfulness practice. It's essentially, the practice of meditation and mindfulness is essentially to make connections in the brain that are normally compartmentalized. And when you open up those parts of the brain, those parts of the mind, that experience, anybody who does like a long-term meditation retreat will find, almost without exception, what's there is when you strip things away, when you strip away the things that are not so important, is a feeling, an embodied feeling of love beyond description. Love and appreciation and joy seem to just be there at the base of being a human being. At one point, I called my publisher and said, I want to change the title of my book to How to Change Your Mind Without Drugs.
Right.
Because in a way, and even I think it's no accident, even that when Norman talked about it, and that of these seven practices, the first practice is love the work. And the work, in a way, is the practice of love. It's not the job that you're doing. It's to love the work of finding out what's most important to being a human being. And the answer is love. The answer is what's most important is to be in love with yourself, to be in love with the practice of discovering what it is to be human, which means getting to know all of these difficult things, you know.
That takes me to a wonderful story, Buddhist story, that you put in the book about the 84 problems mm-hmm. and really taps into mm-hmm. what you're talking about, mm-hmm. being in love with life, that open-heartedness and the way that we function, and we problems come up and we, you know, that distract us, and then we get really involved with them and they are there. So talk about the 84 practices that the Buddha talks about.
Yeah, well, this is in the kind of opening of the seventh practice, Keep Making It Simpler. And it's a story about a farmer that comes to the historical Buddha and says, can you help me? I've got problems. My crops aren't growing because the weather isn't cooperating. My wife is being difficult. We're just having a lot of conflict. And my children, as they're growing up, they're not respecting me. And so you're the wise, you know, Buddha, can you help me? And the Buddha says, looks at the farmer and says, no, I can't help you with your problems. He says, in fact, every human being has 83 problems. And as soon as you solve one, another one pops up to take its place. But then the Buddha says, but I can probably help you with the 84th problem. And the farmer says, what's that? And the Buddha says, But 84th problem is not wanting to have any problems. And I think the teaching there is, of course, none of us want problems, but it's about shifting our relationship with them. What would it be like? Again, it's funny how all these practices are kind of interwoven. It reminds me a lot of don't be an expert, because if you're not an expert, you can appreciate your problems. If you want to make things simpler, is don't be pushing problems away. I just thought of early on when I was CEO of my last organization. We were experimenting with a lot of different new projects and programs, and one of my employees came up and said, you know, I feel like I'm juggling a lot of balls. I'm just juggling a lot of balls, and it's really getting me stressed. And I looked at him and said, let's change the metaphor. How about if instead of juggling a lot of balls, you're planting a lot of seeds?
Mm.
And immediately, it's this, you know, immediately he could relax. And things became simpler. Seed planting is so much simpler. And it's more like being a farmer instead of a circus juggler.
Mm.
So it's interesting, just somehow shifting metaphors. So it's like shifting our relationship with our problems can be a way of embodying a little bit more calmness and equanimity. And this was, I think, part of the culture in the Tassajara kitchen was bring it on. Unknown, things going wrong, people not like what, like it's just, that's just the way of the world here. And I can handle it. And on another level, I think it's like my heart can handle it. My heart and my way of being are wide enough that I can handle it. And if I need help, I can ask for help. If it's too much, I can ask for help. I can ask for support.
Now, there is a big one. I mean, we're taught to be such individuals and stand, and it's quite something that's really valued in our society.
Practice number six, depend on others.
Okay, let's talk about that, because that's a big deal for us, and especially in Western mm-hmm. society.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, all of these are a bit paradoxical, right? That it's funny, somewhere in different of my writings, I've written, you know, if it's not paradoxical, it's not true. And I really tried to find who I got that from. And unfortunately, if you Google that quote, you know what will come up? Mark Lesser.
Oh, my God.
Totally not helpful. I did not come up with that. I got it from someone. But of course, we should be self-sufficient. Of course, we should learn to stand on our own two feet. It's an important quality, and we have to depend on others. We just do. You know, we depend on others for clean air, you know, for the quality of our water, for the quality of our health care, for our life. But then when it comes to in the business world, this is one of the huge shifts happening, is that, in fact, there is a recent Harvard study that said the word in work these days is collaboration. That everything, almost everything is done, if not in teams of two, in larger teams. And collaboration, it's like, I find it so exciting to work, to go into companies, not only like Google, but any company, even small companies are now working globally. And working across time zones, and that the need to collaborate at all kinds of levels, from, you know, from program development to problem solving to it's all about people depending on each other, and depending on each other requires mindfulness and emotional intelligence. It requires listening at many levels, responding instead of reacting.
And it also, I think, requires, when we're working with others, to really know the strengths and the weaknesses of each other.
That's
you know, that we don't start jumping on someone. You said something earlier about a person who was chopping carrots, mm-hmm. and you needed them chopped really fast. Mm-hmm. That person was not capable of chopping them fast. Mm-hmm. And so you said, oh, we need a second person in here, rather than, you know, beating that person up for not doing what they could not do.
That's right. That's right. I remember being in the kitchen and a group of people would be together, you know, prepping and noticing that they were having a good time talking to each other. And I think they like, oh, maybe I haven't conveyed clearly enough. I'm depending on them, and that these things need to get done. And I realize that they want to connect with each other, but not now. And I need to. So it's interesting. I call it the I need this done now, and I still love you, but stop the chatting and get to work.
Yeah.
And there'll be time. I can promise you there'll be time for you to connect with each other.
So that's like you're talking about mindfulness and our learning better and better to be skillful with one another, and to keep the big picture in mind.
Yeah.
We're just learning how to be more skillful. I want to remind our listeners that I'm here with Mark Lesser, and he has been a Zen teacher and a practicer of Zen for many years, and he's been working in businesses and helping businesses work better together, helping their culture, helping them to look at how they can be more effective in their working together. And he's the author of 7 Practices of a Mindful Leader. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. And Mark, I'd love to ask you to read a couple of paragraphs from the book, because they really popped out at me as being significant. So many things did, but if you could read these 2 paragraphs, and then we'll talk about them.
Sure, I'd be happy to. And these are from the chapter, Keep Making It Simpler. Acceptance, embracing the fact of impermanence and the certainty of change, is a powerful tool for cultivating simplicity. Much of our doing is extra and moves us in the direction of complexity. The key is to integrate doing and non-doing, effort and effortlessness. This isn't some magic trick or ancient mysterious spiritual practice. When you're speaking or writing, just speak or write without doing anything extra. This same attitude of just doing what you're doing without comparing or judging or trying to get to the next activity can be cultivated in leading, in listening, in driving, in working alone or with others, in relationships, as well as in your daily activities. The intention of the 7th practice is to see or recognize the most important thing in any given moment, even in the midst of our busy lives. We can't avoid challenges or problems or grief or death, but when we feel confused and overwhelmed, we can remember, keep making it simpler, and simpler still. Each moment and each day, keep making life less complicated, so we are more focused, spacious, and present. So we prioritize the most important action to take.
That's
pretty good.
That's pretty good, Mark. That's pretty good. So constantly looking at what is the most important thing right now in this moment.
Yeah, and I think embedded in there, and this is very subtle and profound teaching, I think, in mindfulness, and it's a kind of radical responsibility for yourself. We humans, me included, you know, actually I loved, as I was reading that, I thought to myself, yeah, I should pay attention to this. This is good. I wrote this book for me, you know?
Yeah.
And, but this radical responsibility And noticing how it's easy to blame others for our situation, whether it's our parents, our culture, our society. It can't be me, right? If things aren't going well, if I'm not succeeding or happy, or it's like, well, you know, yes, there's an interdependency and there's a depend on others, but there's this radical sense of taking responsibility for my own state of mind, my own sense of well-being, and responsibility for my part in relationships that I feel is embedded in that. It's scary and it's freeing. In fact, there's a collection by, it's famous in a small slice of this world, a book called Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind by Shunryu Suzuki, the founder of the Zen Center.
Oh, everybody should have a copy of that book.
It's a wonderful book.
Classic.
There's a chapter in there that the purpose of practice is to become the boss of everything.
Mm.
And he doesn't mean, you know, it's not about bossing people around. It's more like radical responsibility that we practice. There's a part of practice.
Is that like the boss, like the buck stops here sort of situation that, okay, you can't blame anybody else?
That's right. That's right. Like, it's about noticing how we, when we're hurt or something goes wrong, our minds almost magnificently, instantly go to blame. Who to blame?
Of course.
Can't be me.
Yeah.
But it's like, no, it's like noticing that and again, taking on, I'm responsible for this state of mind. I'm responsible for my reactions and responses showing up. It's a kind of, it's again, I like this kind of sense of owning my breath, owning my body, owning this state of mind. It's not beating myself up. It's a kind of practice of compassion and curiosity and kindness, not blaming others, not blaming myself, being responsible.
This reminds me, or takes me, and maybe you can remember this, that you wrote about in the book about, and you were at a workshop that Robert Gass was leading, and he came up with this question. Do you recall that? He came up with the question about what are the choices?
What's really needed? What's needed? And this was a leadership workshop I did with Robert years ago, in which he, you know, got out a piece of paper and said, you know, what's essential? What really is essential? Like money? Well, no. You know, you could live. You'd survive without money. It might be really hard. You know, it's just things, you know, just getting, kind of honing into, like, what really is essential.
I think
essential.
It came down to food, water, and air.
Yeah.
Those things we absolutely are essential.
Yeah.
But everything else, like, almost everything on that list kind of came up with, we have a choice, and that was... Yeah.
But I think then you can take that, I think, and... Like if you're someone who is running a company, you can, for the context of, well, what, you know, what are the essential pieces here? And it might be, you know, it might be how I take care of my customers. It might be the particular quality of the products, the particular quality of these. So it's interesting to take that in different contexts, but to keep coming back to that question. That question is, what is essential? What is most important right now in this moment, in my relationship, in my business? You know, if I'm having a conversation with my spouse or child or parent, like cutting away all the things. It's a great question. Is what's extra here? What am I doing that's extra?
Right. I'm thinking of a moment that you talk about just briefly in the book, and you tell on yourself. And that's when your mom moved from Florida to the West Coast to be with you in her dying. I mean, she was very, very ill and had a stroke. And it was a moment when you were picking her up to take her to the doctor, and you were very busy in your life, and she was very slow. She wasn't ready.
Yeah.
And that was kind of one of those moments, a choiceful moment. And can you describe that?
Yeah, this was, I was CEO of a publishing company at the time, and my mother was in my house. She had just moved into my house, and we had agreed, you know, I was going to come home and take her to the doctor, and I was in a rush. Mom, I need you to be ready. And I came home on my lunch hour, and my mother's in her pajamas. And I noticed my own anger and disappointment. We had this agreement. And then I'm saying that she needs to get dressed, and I'm noticing that she couldn't get dressed by herself. And that my ideas, my needs were totally unuseful and unnecessary. You know, of course, you know, I had to shift. I had to shift my expectation. What's important here? I could pick up the phone and call, say, I need you guys to cover for me. I'm going to be a couple hours late. Here's what's happening. Take care of it. I can do that. Even if I was a one-person business, I could have called my clients and said, and then to just be there with my mother, help her get dressed, and take her to the doctor.
And that's important. What I loved about that was that you demonstrated that kind of shift that we can do. We can go, we're so busy in our day, and we're just going tunnel vision through our day. And something, of course, is coming in from the side and knocking us off.
Yeah.
And there's that choice point, and there's where we go down to, and we didn't even get into this, but you can find it in the book. It's called Ground Truth. We go to our fundamental. What is absolutely, what do I value here? And what you saw yourself in that moment, I value my relationship with my mother and my commitment to support her in this moment in her life. And it shifted everything. Everything else dissolves.
Totally. Yeah, and that expression, ground truth, it comes from the military, in which, you know, that there's a distinction between, you know, what the generals in the, you know, who are in Washington or in some office, what they think is happening. And the ground truth is what's happening on the ground. What are the people who are there actually saying? So it's kind of using that expression with, when we drop down, what's actually happening?
There's so much more that we could go into. I mean, we just kind of opened the door of that one. So I'm going to encourage people to go to the book and really research and look carefully at that, because that's such a beautiful concept. I want to thank you so much, Mark, for being with us on New Dimensions.
Thank you, Justine.
I've been here with Mark Lesser, and he's the author of Seven Practices of a Mindful Leader, Lessons from Google and a Zen Monastery Kitchen. And if you want to know more about his work, you can go to his website, marklesser.net. And he spells his name MarkLesser, marklesser.net. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You've been listening to New Dimensions. This is program number 3678.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. This program was recorded at Strawberry Hill Productions, a full-service podcast production studio in Novato, California. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard, to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our New Dimensions and New Dimensions Cafe podcasts, and to access thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org. Or call us at 707-468-5215. That's 707-468-5215. Please join us next time as we explore New Dimensions.
Thank you for listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, British Columbia.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Last spring, in a Nebraska prairie, workers carrying drip torches carefully burned a narrow strip of prairie grass. They were creating the perimeter for a prescribed burn, a planned fire that removes dry vegetation and reduces the risk of severe wildfire. But this was not your typical burn crew. The team was composed almost entirely of women.
In fire as a whole, we tend to see that women make up somewhere around 10% of the workforce. You know, many women who work in fire are the only woman on their entire crew. There's a lot of siloing and isolation.
Lainia Quinn Davidson directs the Women in Fire Training Exchange Program. It runs 2-week-long training events for women from various backgrounds, from professional firefighters to those who have never worked with fire. She says that as climate change increases the risk of devastating wildfires, there's a growing need for a wide range of people who understand and are trained in techniques like prescribed burning.
You want different kinds of people thinking about the problems, and you want different kinds of leadership. You want people to feel comfortable in the work so that they can operate at their best.
So she says the program is helping expand and strengthen that workforce. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
Looking back.